You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
In San Diego, and a special crossover edition of the D-backs and Phillies podcast. I'm Mike Farron from the Arizona Diamondbacks, joined by Kevin Franzen, former major leaguer and Phillies broadcaster, as we get to the end of the winter meetings. And
former Diamondbacks farmhand.
Former D-backs farmhand. What are you, playing Reno?
Was it one
Reno?
Month?
1 month?
I probably the only guy in Reno history never to have an extra base hit as a home player. Yeah.
That's only because Bloomquist didn't play there.
No, no, it was brutal. Fun time, though. We had a good time. Me and Phil Nevin. If you can only imagine.
Can I tell my favorite Phil Nevin story?
I have one, too. I don't know if it could go on air. I'll tell you this one.
So I was one of my first affiliated play-by-play job was with the Bowie Bay Sox. And Phil was managing the Erie Seawolves at the time. And there was a game. Felix P.A. was on a rehab assignment with Bowie.
Whatever happened?
Yeah, incredible tools, right? And had one everywhere and went, just never put it together. PA tries to score from first on an extra base hit, like 7-7 game, bottom of the ninth, comes home. He is out by, like, from me to that Christmas tree. Home plate umpire calls him safe. Bowie goes nuts. PA's high-fiving with his team. Nevin loses it. Phil goes crazy. And the clubhouses in Bowie are down in the corners. You played in the Eastern League, right? So you know the visiting clubhouse in Bowie, way down the left field line.
Hottest
right?
game I ever played was in Bowie.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure.
Hottest game.
100% humidity, right?
No air conditioning. Our dryer blew up, and we had the fire department there, so we were outside in that weather, waiting around the whole time.
So Phil's a great coach, good dude, a longtime Diamondbacks coach, now with the Yankees. He is fit to be tied. And he goes out to home plate, and he is furious. And he rips open his jersey, and the buttons go flying everywhere. And the poor umpire, the other part of it is that the clubhouses are down the left field line, but by the visiting clubhouse is where the umpire's clubhouse is. So this poor umpire has to have Phil berate him all the way down the left field line, all the way into the clubhouse. Phil got into the clubhouse, put his fist through the wall in the manager's office. He was so mad. His players were tweeting out photos of it. This is like in the early days of Twitter. So this would have been like 2009, yeah. 2010, somewhere around there. And it just like, could you imagine? Like, so that's like a 400-foot walk.
That's a long walk.
Long walk with Phil Nevin just like cursing you out for the whole time. It's one of my favorite ejections ever.
I got to have this. It's also a Phil Nevin ejection one. So we're in Vegas, and it is in that month that I'm there in Reno, and we're having a good time. And you know, we show up there, and Nev goes, you know, guys, 6 o'clock, show up every night. See you then. And so we're like, all right. So we show up at 6 o'clock every night. Happens to be like I get the veteran like day off like this in Vegas, and so it was really nice. I pinch hit late, and we're facing Syndergaard. Syndergaard punches me out on like a 12 pitch at bat, but he punches me out on a fastball that is like neck high off the plate, and the umpire like rings me up.
Because he never saw it.
Never saw it, and it was like one of those where I was halfway down the line, like not even like sprinting down there, you know, like trying to sell it. It was like, okay, yeah, took my stuff off, went, and he's doing it. I'm like, wait, what? By that time, Nev is getting thrown out of the game, but I'm like, he is losing his mind right now. What are you doing? But he kind of went into a waddle, like out. I'm like, what? We get back inside. So Franz, he goes, I don't know how he did that. Can you believe that? But he goes, crap my pants as I was coming out. He goes, thanks a lot, appreciate it. So it's like he's going nuts on this guy, and I'm like, So you went nuts on that whole time, and you know, so we'll leave it there on that.
Phil's a really nice guy. Like, I get to know him not super well, but he spent a month on the big league staff in 16. But he's an intimidating dude. I mean, I remember when he was drafted. We're about the same age, so you remember when he was number one overall pick.
Yes.
Like, he is a monstrous dude. Like, if I were an umpire, he would scare the living daylights out of me.
And he looks good now, too, especially in the pinstripes. He's lost some weight, but he's still shredded. But, like, when he was a player, good God. Like, I still remember him coming in with the Padres and stuff, and you're like, now that's what you're supposed to look like as a major leaguer, right? Like, and to be a coach and to be who he is now, like, as far as, you know, post-playing career, damn. Like, what a job. Hey, let me ask you this. Okay, so.
But anyway, this is the Phil Nevin podcast. Phil Nevin appreciation podcast.
The ejection stories. But so, you know. The Phillies get into non-tendering a couple guys in Cesar Hernandez and Michael Franco, and we saw it a little bit with the D-backs and you know, Taijuan Walker is one of those Steven Souza Jr. The one guy that I was hoping for was Jake Lamb. Like, did the D-backs hold on to him to see if they can keep the trade, or is it that they hold on to him because they think that, you know, they're going to utilize him and he's going to be a significant piece for him?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a great question. I mean, I think there's a couple things at play. I mean, one, you know, Jake was an all-star the last time he was healthy. I mean, 30-homer season, and he's battled injuries the last 2 years. But there were, you know, you can get tricked by small samples. But sometimes when you know, you know. In the last week of the season, Jake looked an awful lot like Jake Lamb. And it's, for offense, it struggled as much as it did against right-handed pitching. And the fact that he's added the versatility to play first and play third. And, you know, when he went back to third, Jake's worked really hard to become a solid third baseman. He was not a great defender early on. I think he would say that. But he can give some flexibility. He gives a left-handed bat with power. He gives you a little bit of insurance, I think, as an organization. If, you know, if Christian Walker takes a step back, and Walker had a really good year last year, and you the more information you get, the more you find out. And I think Christian can hit, and I think he's a really conscientious hitter, too. But I think there's a lot of reasons why you keep Jake Lamb, especially when you have an extra roster spot available now, because we're going to go to 26-man rosters. I think there's a lot of plate appearances for him. I think he gives you left-handed power, and that's something that you desperately need if you're a team that's going to have success. I want to ask you, on the Philly standpoint, I mean, I understand that they're trying to push some money around, and that, you know, we'll talk about Didi Gregorius in a minute, but obviously there's a tie there with the Diamondbacks,
huge
too.
Huge tie.
But Cesar Hernandez has been a really good player over the last several years. Last year was, about a six-week stretch where he really struggled. And other than that, everything looked like normal. What happened? Why?
You know,
why?
To be honest, like, you look at the year before, and he was a 100-walk guy. And he played with two broken feet, basically. He fouled balls off each foot, and he was battling that. So that was the end of 18. He goes in this year not taking. And trust me, I'm a guy that never took. Like, I saw the rosin bag being thrown, and I'm swinging. But there's a difference with a guy like Cesar. Like, he's a leadoff type. He has the speed to steal bases. He has the athleticism to do that. So you didn't see that come to fruition because he was, you know, swinging away. There's a lot of, you know, flares and doing stuff. He listened to the entire staff, and this was not one thing negative on Cesar. He came in huge, and he was very muscular, and he loses so much weight. So they were so worried about him not, you know, being able to hold up, that they're like, we want you to put on weight. He did it, and he put on great weight. It wasn't like he came in out of shape. No, he was in great shape. But it took a while for it. I would never say he never got used to playing like that.
Yeah.
And so once he started to, you know, finally slim down to be like who Cesar is, and that to me is, you know, a lean, you know, like just speedier guy. He did lose a little bit of mobility in his hips. You could just tell, like, just the way he was, you know, going down for ground balls and all that stuff. It took a while. With that being said, he just I don't know if you want to spend $10, $12 million on a guy like that for a year. You know, you're not getting the production. He had 32 doubles. He had, you know, a couple of triples. He had more home runs than he did the previous year. But it still is at $10, $12 million because he's one position guy.
Right.
You know, and it's a very, you know, it's a very average second base. He's not a very good second baseman, but he is going to produce. If you move him to third base, you know, you wonder because he has a good arm.
But just doesn't have the power.
Bat's not going to do it. Yeah, so you wonder, is he the utility guy? He played center field in 2013 at the end of the year, and you're going, oh, my gosh, like, could he be that? And he had, it just, he's the guy that you just don't know. Do you want to rely, you know, $10-12 million on your payroll? I can see and understand completely why the Phillies didn't do it.
I guess I understand it too, especially with Scott Kingery there, because Kingery, obviously the Phoenix product, can play a bunch of different positions. And the big news, one of the big pieces of news out of these winter meetings have been Didi Gregorius going to the Phillies. I assume that means Gene Segura goes to second base.
Well, you've had both.
You've had both in that situation, right? Yeah. I mean, shortstop, second base. Where do you see – where do you – could Gene be a second baseman?
I
saw him as a third baseman.
I see Gene as a second baseman because we saw it in Arizona. I mean, his best offensive year.
Fast infield, and you saw someone that could play.
He's got, I think, at second base, it's like him and John Scope probably have the best second base arms. I mean, it's, and his transfers on double plays are really quick. And I mean, Gene's year that he had with the Diamondbacks was fantastic. 20 homers and 20 steals, and was really, really good. And, you know, I'd heard a little bit that he was ready to move off of shortstop. I think he felt like the demands on his body probably were a little bit much. I think he understood that he wasn't playing that well defensively. But I think the idea of putting him and Didi up the middle, Didi's not the same defender he was when he came up with the Reds, but he's still pretty solid. He's still got a great arm. It's a really interesting – I think it's got a chance to be the best defensive infield the Phillies have had, certainly since they've gotten back into relevance.
Well, and let me ask you this, because you see it and you – It's pretty apparent that Christian Walker has some absolute unbelievable skills at first base.
Yes.
Ketel Marte, when he's at second base, you can see someone that covers so much ground. So with that being said, Reese doesn't have a lot of he doesn't cover a lot of ground. Gene moving over to second base, and it's a couple of years away from you seeing him at second base. Could he take over that ground? That's why having a guy like Kingery, who is so special, like he is, you put him at second base, he's going to win a Gold Glove. You know, and you wonder if that was the move. If you were to put Gene at third, you know, there's so many different things they have. Because Didi, and I'm glad we were doing this because I was going to ask you, because you've seen him. You've seen where he was, where he still hadn't even reached that potential. But he defensively, he was really good. You guys are okay, but, you know, better off now at shortstop with Nick Ahmed. But
he's not bad.
No, he's not bad. but seeing Didi play and being able to have a guy right there. The range is there, the arm is there, the hands are there. It's the consistency, correct? I mean, we would always say with Didi, the consistency we see with Nick Ahmed is not the same. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's night and day.
Yeah.
But how much does he bring to the table for the Phillies?
Well, I think Didi's, I mean, you're talking about when he's healthy or has been healthy, has been a plus offensive player at the position. And, you know, I think smart probably on his part, come to play on a one-year deal. You know, he missed half of last year coming off Tommy John surgery. He's got power. It's good playing a ballpark that's going to reward the power. You know, he has familiarity with Joe Girardi, the new manager of the Phillies. They played for him in New York. And I think he's going to bring – he just brings a positive element, I think, every day, just in his personality. You know, he's an interesting guy. He's an artist.
Have you ever met a kid from Curacao that's like
– hasn't loved it? Have you ever been to Curacao? Like, I would be really happy too.
Everybody is just like, oh, my gosh. They come off the island and they're like – I speak five languages. They say hello to you and have a conversation, looking you right in the eye. It's like, how is – What else do you want from a person? Oh, he's actually really good at baseball too.
Yeah. I think it's a nice pickup for the Phillies in that you know, it helps us stabilize the infield. It still gives them a little bit of flexibility with Kingery. You could play some center with, you could split time with him and Hazley, I suppose, and have Kingery at third and let him move around a bunch of positions. I think that's something that's going to get sorted out for them in spring training more than anything.
I wonder, okay, so the Dodgers have this whole deal, and I think it brings up a point to you because of this guy, and I love him more than anything, but it's the health. If they're willing to trade away A.J. Pollock and his contract and maybe attach someone to it to take on, the Phillies are right on the cusp of that luxury tax. Seeing an A.J. Pollock and Adam Hazley together in center field now, you're like, ooh.
A.J. had a rough go late in the year last year defensively. Mm-hmm. He wasn't quite the same, but he really destroys left-handed pitching still. And, yeah, I mean, I think in that ballpark, he's a Jersey guy. Like, I think that would make sense. There's been plenty of rumors that the Dodgers are looking to trade him. That's a possibility. They'd be willing to eat some money. So we'll see how that plays out.
Guy, right?
I mean, yeah, solid guy. I mean, he's a pro. He's a guy that is very serious about his craft. He works very hard at it. And when he gets into those, you know, 10-week stretches where he's really locked in, he can carry an offense. I mean, remember before he you know, broke his thumb in 2018, the first 6 weeks of that season, he was the best player in the National League.
Disgusting.
So, I mean, that would be an interesting pickup. All right, so I'm kind of curious. The Diamondbacks are still on the hunt for corner outfield help. Mm-hmm. And while
you
they
can't
seem
have
to be...
Can't have Herbert.
Please?
Yeah, no.
No. Nope. Can't have him. Nope. You can have Jay Bruce?
I think what's much more likely... I love Jay. Jay's,
I do, too.
Jay's great,
too. I'm just trying to think, like, who would you want?
I'm curious about Corey Dickerson. Because I think the Diamondbacks are going down the road. Right now, it seems like the trade route, mm-hmm. most likely. They need to realistically fill center field and right field or second base and right field. Those are the two places that they need to fit. Maybe Cesar Hernandez ends up being a fit for them at second. That could be a possibility. I actually think that would be a fairly nice fit. Mm-hmm. But I also think Ketel Marte's best position is second. Somewhere they're going to try and trade for someone. They may try and sign someone at the other corner. Dickerson went off with the Phillies last year and has turned himself into, at least 2 years ago, turned himself into a defender that won the Gold Glove Award. He's a very malleable hitter in that he's got a lot of different things that he can do. If you want him to be a power guy, he thinks he can be a power guy. If you want him to be a whole field guy, he thinks he can be the whole field guy. Cut down on strikeouts, put the ball in play. He's pretty talented with the bat in his hand. You got a chance to see him down the stretch and be around him. What's he like?
Quiet. In such a good way. He's so dedicated to his craft, and whether you know that craft is on the defensive side or it's on the offensive side, we know the offensive prowess. I mean, the guy had 30 home runs when he was with the Rays, right? And ends up getting DFA because he couldn't handle the high fastball. That's what they were worried about, really. So he turned himself into a high fastball hitter. Not like that's like his not number one, but he corrected some of those things. Shortens up with two strikes. Some of the things that you wish. So many younger guys would be able to do. It's like, yeah, he might lose a little bit of power, but his power that he has. He's got shorter arms. He's not going to get tied up on anything. The adjustments that he makes with bat to a bat. Like, he's the guy that you wish with, like, an Andrew McCutchen you can match up, you know, together and be like, okay, that makes sense right there. But I think Corey's – he could still play a lot, but it's always going to be the health with him. And so is that platoon situation a good thing? I do think so. I personally think that, but I think Corey knows thyself.
Yeah.
And he wants to continue to play and be that guy, be able to go in there and play every day. Would he be a fit? He's a fit anywhere. That, first and foremost, he's a fit anywhere. In any team, any clubhouse, he is that guy. I would love for him to be back in the field. I just don't see them being able to do it.
Well, that's why I think he might be a fit. If you get down this road, once you go through the trade market and you start looking at the outfielders, because I think so. This is one of my theories here coming out of the winter meetings. I think the corner outfield free agent market is going to move slowly because you have a lot of guys.
Cole Calhoun's still out there.
Well, because in here I'll explain why. Cole Calhoun, Buckeye native, I think he also would be a great fit for the Diamondbacks. He's been linked to him a little bit, but Calhoun, Corey Dickerson, Yasiel Puig, Nicholas Castellanos, Steven Souza Jr., who the Diamondbacks just non-tendered. I'm trying to think. There's one other guy that I was thinking of that is in that mix among corner outfielders, Marcell Ozuna. Ozuna probably has the highest upside of them. He's had the best overall season of any of those players. But they all kind of fit in the same range on a scouting scale as an average major league regular at the corner, right? Right around
there.
100%. And so I think because, you know, like the starting pitching market we've seen move really quickly. Like here we saw two monster deals for starters, and I think we're going to see more before we wrap up. That I think the reason why we saw that is there was a lot of variability in the number of starters. You had some front of the rotation guys. You had some number two, number three types. You had a fair number of number fours. So there's going to be a lot of places to space out. With the outfielders, they're all kind of the same, and so that's going to bog their market down a little bit. And I think those guys will all end up with similar deals. Ozuna's going to end up with the most out of it, I think, for sure, because I do think that there's more upside there. But I think, in general, that's the way that they'll be viewed, and I think that's going to make them have to wait. Because I'm with you. I love Cole Calhoun. I love Corey Dickerson.
Oh,
I love it. Like Nicholas Castellanos' bat a lot. I know there's questions about his defense, but that guy can hit. That's the market that I think we start talking about either closer to Christmas or into the new year.
Well, let me ask you about another market. Is that 4-5 guy, right? And okay, so the guy that you guys non-tendered in Taiwan Walker. Is he a starter?
It's a good question.
Because if I'm him, I'm taking a one-year deal and seeing what teams have. I'm going to a winner because the winners are going to want him. And the reason I say it, they're going to want him as a reliever. That fastball split that he has, if he's a two-pitch pitcher, I mean, he's the size of Dela Batances, right? I mean, he's huge.
Yeah.
Could you see that happening? Could you see him being healthy enough to do it? Or could you see him not wanting to be a reliever?
He was healthy at the end of the year, which is certainly good news for him. And Ty worked really hard, reshaped his body coming back. If I were him, I would want to go to a second division team that was going to give me a chance to start every day. Because I think you're going to end up making more value for yourself, especially, and this is kind of looking ahead, the free agent starting pitching market next winter isn't all that great. So it's an opportunity for you to recoup a lot of value. If you go to a place like, you know, let's say Kansas City or Detroit, and you pitch healthy and you pitch well, one, you're probably going to end up in a pennant race because you're going to sign a one-year deal and they're going to trade you in the deadline. Then if you pitch really well, you're not going to have a qualifying offer attached to you, which means that you're going to, because you've been traded in the middle of the season, so you're not going to have draft pick compensation that's attached to you. And two, you're going to walk out on the free agent market that's a little bit thinner for starting pitchers and give yourself a pretty good opportunity to sign a good deal. So I to me, that's the better role for Ty.
What about with the addition of Brian Price? I mean, you know Brian from your time with the Diamondbacks, and he was there for a little bit, and can he be the game changer for a lot of these guys that we're seeing? Because you guys lost Mike Butcher, and you know, he was let go or not renewed, and Matt Hergis is now your guy, and you know, everyone's trying to find that right fit. Like him and Brian Price, I mean, he could be that guy for the Phillies. I mean, someone that has that old school ability and being away from the game a little bit to understand the analytical side. I mean, Hergis is a very analytical guy. I mean, where do you see in, you know, both our situations, knowing both of those guys?
So I haven't talked enough to Matt to really know. You probably know Matt better. I know Matt's brother-in-law really well, Todd Hollinsworth. So, like, I've talked to Holly about Matt, but I haven't talked to Matt yet. It is interesting that Brian Price turned down the Diamondbacks and ended up with the Phillies. He and Joe Girardi were scheduled to manage and be the pitching coach of the Premier 12 tournament together.
Crazy.
Well, it's probably what helped to lead to that, they had a relationship working on USA Baseball. I'll be really interested to see, because it's a big departure from Chris Young, the previous pitching coach, who was data savvy but also in his first time as pitching coach. And I know from knowing Chris that this is not Chris the 6'10 pitcher. This is Chris, the former Mississippi State standout who was a scout, who he felt like he made some mistakes in terms of communicating. I don't think communication is going to be an issue with Brian. I mean, that's always been his strength with pitchers. It's just going to be a matter of whether or not he can get more out of the back end of the Phillies rotation. You know, with Matt Hergis, I think what you're hoping for with Matt is a really collaborative effort with him and Dan Heron in particular. You know,
I threw 88.
Dan Heron's a really important guy when it comes to planning what the starters are doing, and I think Matt's relationship with Dan will be paramount. That's not to say that Mike Butcher and Dan Heron didn't have a good relationship, but I think it's just that's what you're looking at going forward, and see what, you know, how Matt and Dan get on the same page and try and help listen to pitchers to see how they can get to the next level, because they're going to be counting a lot on Zach Gallen taking another step forward, Luke Weaver being healthy, taking another step forward, Robbie Ray potentially bouncing back. Those names bandied about in trade rumors. Like, Robbie potentially he has the stuff to be able to dominate. So you look at that start, Mike Leake's pretty solid. Alex Young had a good rookie year. There's some good moments from Taylor Clark. Like, there's a little bit of depth there, and it's going to be interesting to see how Matt relates to that.
Isn't it incredible how these organizations, how important the minor league thing is, right? And the minor league depth.
Did you appreciate that when you played?
Yes.
I did.
Well, you were minor league depth.
I mean, I was minor league depth at the end. Yeah, for sure. But I mean, like, before, you were so top heavy. Right? And with the Giants, you were so top-heavy. And how did you supplement it? You supplemented through the minor leagues, but the minor leagues wasn't producing anything. Like, and we were coming up, and we were like, you know, I was a everyday second baseman for a year and a half, tearing it up, and next thing you know, I'm a utility guy. So that was like that was the other part. It's like having guys to be able to take in that role and you know, losing pitchers and what pitchers are you bringing in? Like, are they guys that are going to be able to step in and win you 10 games, keep the ship moving? Or are they going to be the guy that's going to be, you might have two good starts and then you're done for a month. Like, you're going to have, you know, four or five straight, just bleh. That's why I've been fascinated by this, because we've seen it with so many teams. Like, what the Yankees did last year, right? I mean, and to see how good they were and sustained all those injuries, and they kept on bringing guys up, and they kept having guys step up, and they had the right
depth
guys.
Is huge.
Depth is huge, and for a team like yourself, yeah. I mean, you see it. You only get a couple high-priced guys, and you only get that like short little window with those guys to keep them. That minor league depth is important. We're starting to see it with the Phillies. The lack of depth that they've had in the last couple years came to bite them in the butt.
Major focus for the Diamondbacks this winter, and as much as there's been talk here and rumors on Madison Bumgarner or you know some bigger names or whatever, it would be a good fit.
I'm
a little bit skeptical that that's going to play out at this point. I think Bumgarner's get a really good contract. I don't necessarily know that that's going to play out, but I think that the biggest thing for the Diamondbacks has been trying to find more quality offensive pieces. I mean, that's one of the things you watch across the division that the Dodgers have done. Yeah, they have stars, but when their stars either need a day off or are on the injured list, they have guys that can fill in capably for it. So, all right. This has been fun. This is good to see
awesome.
You. You and I get a chance to do this in our other gigs.
Really,
all the time.
You don't get to talk
never
to each other face
to face. I know. It's usually in press rooms. So this is the first time we've ever tried the crossover episode. It's
The best part
it's not Law and Order meets Homicide, but
no. But I mean, like the fact that there's so many ties between the D-backs and Phillies in this particular year, I think is tremendous. And there's so many things that we could run off of each other. It's been great, and I've had a blast working with you on the MLB Network Radio. So it's been good times.
Yeah, I've too. So it's great to see you. Safe travels. Happy holidays to you.
Happy holidays to you. In my cold jersey.
Kevin Franzen from the Philadelphia Phillies. Thanks to the Phillies and Kevin for joining us. Fun guy and a fine broadcaster. Pretty good player, too. Good utility man over the course of his career. All right, let's lock down more on the Diamondbacks and what happened at the winter meetings with Steve Gilbert of MLB.com. Interested in your take on those winter meetings of the D-backs. Surprised it's been as quiet as it has been?
A little bit. Again, they're such a hard front office to predict because they're very tight-lipped and they're very creative. But it seemed like coming in that, you know, they had some desirable trade chips. They had some money to spend. So you thought maybe something would get done. It's always hard to gauge. And then, you know, I guess with all the free agents kind of going off the market, some of the bigger ticket free agents, that may have kind of tamped down a little bit of the trade talk for right now because teams are kind of focused on the free agents. So I think that's probably what's made their winter meetings a little slower because I still think that their biggest acquisitions could come via trade as opposed to free agency. And so I think teams are kind of focused right now on it appears free agents, so that may slow things down a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's a great point because we've really only seen one moderately significant deal here and one involving a corner outfielder, which seems to be what the D-backs want, and that's the Nomar Mazara trade late Tuesday night to the White Sox. And I know they were linked to Mazara, but I don't know how deep their interest really went in him. And I think you're right. I mean, this has turned into the meetings of the nine-figure contract. We've seen a fair amount of moves, and most of the significant people coming off the board makes you wonder if next week's going to be a little bit more active leading into Christmas.
Yeah, you wonder at some point how many free agents will need to come off the board before teams start to go, okay, now let's focus back on trades and circle back with these teams that we kind of laid the groundwork with. So I'm interested to see that. You know, they were linked to Madison Bumgarner. Nick Pecoro had a report about, you know, possibly $70 million, whatever, floated a figure. And maybe a week ago that was somewhere in the ballpark of what people might have thought for Madison Bumgarner, but not after all these pitching things. Now you start to think, wow, could he really get $100 million? And I just can't see the Diamondbacks at this stage doing that and tying themselves up like that.
Yeah, so like there's a couple things to keep in mind with that. Like if you went to $25 million a year, that basically would be all the savings you had on Zach Greinke over the next two seasons because they're eating $10 million of that contract, so it replaces it. But I think what you hit on was really important in there is that a week ago, I don't think that figure seemed outrageous. Now you're going to look back through history and I mean, Bumgarner's going to end up signing for, you know, I said somebody set the floor for me today at 110. It might be north of that. That's going to be a much bigger number. You know, and these other contracts that are being signed are pulling guys like Josh Donaldson up. You know, when Rendon's deal, presumably with the Angels, we're recording this Wednesday night, gets done, it's probably going to be north of $250 million, which means Josh Donaldson could get $400 million, which means that, you know, that's going to pull up Marcell Ozuna as the next best bat. And so, like, all of a sudden, you're going to start to see you know, a number of these contracts be a little bit higher, maybe in terms of a year, more than the average annual value than I think you saw. And that at least when it, I think Bumgarner was like the one guy in that group that the D-backs may have been considering, but it certainly takes them out of play. And you're going to look at it and be like, whoa, that was off by a little bit.
Yeah, and I think what's going to be interesting, though, now is there going to be a trickle-down effect into the trade market? So if some of these free agents start signing for big money, now all of a sudden Robbie Ray maybe becomes more valuable, or maybe some of the guys the Diamondbacks have targeted via trade are suddenly now going to cost them more. So it's going to be kind of fascinating to kind of see the way the rest of this winter comes out.
I think it's more that they're going to start being available. I mean, that's what, to me, is going to be really interesting, because if you, like, let's say corner outfield, it's not a secret that the D-backs are looking for impact offense, right? And they're most likely you're going to try and do that at a corner outfield spot, most likely right field. Well, if you're looking at impact, you're looking at some pretty good offensive players. There's just not that many that are available. There aren't really that any on the free agent market. There are very few via trade. But once those free agents start going off, then I think that's what you said with the starters. People start circling back to the trade market, and where the D-backs may have been rebuffed a couple of times to this point, maybe they sweeten the pot a little bit, or somebody decides that, well, we really do need to move them because we don't like the way the long-term projection looks now financially. I think that's where things get really interesting for them. And once they take care, there's going to be a domino that falls that in quick succession they're going to fill the other hole.
And I think that's one of the dangers when this offseason started with fans' expectations about the quote-unquote $30 million that they had to spend. Mm-hmm. Because they didn't have just one, you know, people started then shopping at the high end, top of the market, and right. And that would be fine if they only had one hole to fill, but they didn't, you know, they have a few things, like you said, a corner outfield, maybe pitching depth, maybe a center fielder or a second baseman if they don't sign a center fielder. So another bullpen arm maybe. So there's a number of things that they want to try to do with that $30 million. So it doesn't quite seem like it's going to stretch quite as far as it did before.
Let's talk about Shogo Akiyama, because he's an interesting guy. I know you talked to Mike Hazen as part of the media availability today. Diamondbacks have been interested in him. They finally had a meeting. What have you been able to glean outside of Mike, which was basically like, did you meet with him? Yes.
Yeah, they're really impressed with the person. And I talked with somebody who scouted him in Japan yesterday. I talked with this person, and they were said off the charts makeup. Like, great. In the clubhouse, great leader, doesn't like to come out of games. So, I mean, it fits right into the kind of culture that the Diamondbacks, you know, have in that clubhouse. So it seems like he would be a good fit for them. Now, the issue is they're not the only team in baseball looking for a center fielder. There are several, including some of the bigger markets. So not sure. We asked Mike Hazen if after the meeting they had an idea of what Akiyama might want, and his response was, I'm not going to get into that. So my guess is they have to come away from a meeting like that knowing what it would cost, and it'll be interesting to see if they can get something done.
He's got an interesting fallback, too, in that he played for the Cebu Lions, and he has a pretty good contract offer from them, from what I understand. So it's not like he's going in looking just for a deal in baseball. He can always just say, I'm not getting what I want, and go back to NPB and play there. One other trade name that's come up a little bit is Starling Marte, the star center fielder for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Obviously, we talked about Akiyama. Center field is still a need. You either need to fill center field or second base to some degree. What's your sense on where the D-backs stand in their willingness to give up premium prospects to be able to acquire a player like that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, while they have a little bit more depth to trade from down there, and they appear to be willing to part with some of them, I think there are some that they just won't part with, whether it's a Dalton Varsho, a Christian Robinson, Corbin Carroll. I mean, the list can go on and on. Alec Thomas. So I think there's a bunch of guys that they're premium prospects that they're still not willing to kind of part with. Perdomo probably is another guy that falls into that, too. So I think that you could see them make some other moves with some of their minor league prospects, but I think that they're going to still have that some guys that are just they're just not willing to talk about.
Yeah, and that certainly makes sense too, right? Based on how long they've spent doing this, and it's not an even if you took three or four top guys off the table, the system's in a lot better shape. There are enough guys to be able to deal with. You'll love this line. Mike was on MLB Network Radio this week, and he was asked about trading prospects for players. He said, my goal is to never have the number one farm system because he wants to make sure that his team is competing to win. It's a great comment.
Listen, Diamondback fans, whether you agree with what he's done or not agree with some of the moves he's made or whatever it might be, hey, this team has tried to compete. This is not a team that has said, you know what, when he took over in before 2017, and they were terrible in 2016, right? He could have easily said, we're going to blow this up and given himself a five-year cushion to rebuild it and strip it down all the way, and he didn't do it. And he had another chance last year after they traded Paul Goldschmidt. He didn't do it. Another chance at the trade deadline. Didn't do it. And they have found a way to be competitive. Now, they haven't quite gotten over that hump. They won a wild card in 2017, but hey, if you're playing meaningful games in September, I mean, that counts for something. And I think that the fact that that they're still getting better right now, and as you pointed out, with the system getting even better, you know, I think that's all good.
Anything surprise you at these winter meetings?
Well, I think the level of some of these contracts, I mean, I think it started with Strasburg's deal, and it kind of made you go, whoa. And so that kind of surprised me. A little bit that there haven't been many trades, but I guess that goes along with the fact that there's been so many free agent signings. But that's kind of been a surprise for me.
It's nice, though, that we actually have transactions to talk about in winter meetings, isn't it?
I feel like the last few winter meetings, everyone's been walking around just kind of going, yeah, I got nothing to write about today. You got anything to talk about today? No, not really much to talk about today. It's a slow market. So I think it's good for the sport. It's probably good for fans, too, to be able to follow some things right now.
It feels like it's the greatest winter meetings ever because we're in San Diego, and also because the movement. But I was talking to somebody about this today, and you've covered, the winter meetings since 1926. That in terms of actual movement, it's probably more like a standard winter meetings. Now, we don't generally see, like, 3 9-figure deals get handed out in 3 days. There's very rarely that you've seen something similar to that to happen. But in terms of the overall volume of moves, it's not like it's been crazy. It's just been, I think, pretty standard, which is a huge improvement. Shows you how bad incremental improvements can help a team, but it can help a winter meeting.
It really can. By the way, my first winter meetings was 1928. But
sorry.
Yeah,
my notes were blurry.
But I think when you look at it, you're right. This isn't like a ton of movement, but it's been so much money, and we're so accustomed the last few years to slow-moving market. It's a slow-moving market. Oh boy, this is not good. That I think everyone is just so happy to see it, regardless of who's getting what players. It's just like, okay, things are happening again. So I think you're right. We're probably back to where we were 5 years ago, but it feels like this is something new.
Steve, we appreciate the time. Safe travels back home to the Valley, and happy holidays.
Well, I plan on staying in San Diego for as long as I can, but thank you for that.
Steve Gilbert from MLB.com, DBacks.com, as we wrap up the winter meetings. And this edition of the DBacks Hot Stove podcast will be back in a couple of weeks with Steve Berthiaume as we break down the activity before Christmas. Thanks for joining us, and happy holidays.